Welcome to the Emotional Balance Sheet, the go-to podcast for parents with multiple kids, especially those with twins, triplets, or more, who are navigating the maze of modern family life and personal finance. Whether you're overwhelmed by education or retirement planning, parenting dilemmas, career transitions, or trying to define your purpose and plan, we're here to guide you with empathy, encouragement, and expertise. Hosted by Paul Fenner, founder of Tama Capital, a certified financial planner and parent to four kids, including a set of triplets, our podcast is your ally in the quest for financial peace of mind, proving that money matters, but family comes first. Subscribe now and join our community of empowered parents at TamaCapital.com.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. Clients of Tama may retain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
What does comprehensive financial planning even mean? At Tama Capital, it means a family office where lifestyle planning such as retirement, college, portfolio management, tax prep and planning, all are under one umbrella. But it goes beyond numbers. We focus as much on the emotional side of financial planning as we do on the financial side. We get you. We understand your challenges of building a family, business, or career, and a healthy life. We are devoted to wealth planning for families like yours because we are you. Learn how our family can help your family by visiting TamaCapital.com.
If you're a busy parent trying to figure out what to do with your career or job, and there's a difference between the two, this is the episode for you. We welcome back on the show Carrie Shoshe. Carrie is an executive recruiter, entrepreneur, and owner of Purple Square. Purple Square is a boutique recruiting firm based here in Metro Detroit, Michigan. But the great thing about Carrie is that her firm deals with firms across the country and of all given shapes and sizes. We talk about AI and the impact it can have on job search when it comes to resume, interview questions. Carrie provides some really in-depth knowledge on how you may be able to utilize some of these tools in your search. Please enjoy my conversation with Carrie Shoshe. So Carrie Shoshe, welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Great to be here.
So full disclosure for the audience that actually that receives our newsletter every other week, and now we're on LinkedIn as well. Carrie's firm, Purple Square, we showcase positions that Carrie's firm has opened every other week. And it's been, I know I've received feedback, great feedback from it. I'm not sure if anybody's landed a job from it yet, but we really appreciate the partnership with you and Natasha and getting the word out on the openings that you have. And they're not just, most people know that you and I are based here in Michigan, but some of those jobs, you know, you do nationwide recruiting.
Yeah, correct. And there's going to be a lot more coming out in your newsletter soon, I think, because we've gotten really busy, as we've kicked off 2024 and, 6 weeks in now, it's busier right now in 2024 than we were at any point last year. So not sure if that's an indicator of the overall market. We are a boutique firm, but we're really busy.
Well, that's a really, it's like you read my mind. Like that's where I was going first, because as most people know that the job market is so resilient still. It's really strong. I think unemployment's still at like 3.7. You know, we just added over 300,000 jobs in the jobs report. We're recording this mid-February. The jobs came out, report came out a few weeks ago, another $300,000 jobs. But one of the things that I'm hearing from people, and it's more probably anecdotal, I don't think I said that word, but the people that I hear from, like, yeah, headline news, jobs are strong, but it feels like, especially those that are searching for one, it seems like it's taking much longer. Do you have, like, what's your take on that? You just led off with, you guys are really busy right now, But I think there's people out there that are still struggling with the job market. And maybe it's a mismatch of skills of like what jobs are available versus, you know, what field or skill sets they have.
Yeah, I think that I think it could be possibly some mismatch going on. But I also think that while there are a lot of needs out there, I think companies are also being very selective. And in some cases, maybe I think that a lot of hiring managers and business owners and different people in leadership still feel some concern over some of the broader things going on in the economy. So I don't know if that's creating hesitancy or kind of fear-based hiring. That's one of the things that I've posted about on LinkedIn recently too, is just what I've noticed is either hiring managers trying to like risk mitigate their hire, or they're trying to, or mitigate risk in their hire, or they're just adding extra steps and maybe not being as efficient as they could in a search process to make sure they can get the perfect, quote unquote, perfect candidate. And so those are just some things that we've noticed. And we try to guide our clients on balancing efficiency with being thorough. So like, there's kind of a fine line there. Like, you know, companies don't want to rush to make an important hire. And I don't think that's positive for the candidate either.
Right.
And both sides need to have plenty of time to do their due diligence. But there can be a point where it's too much, you know, and then it takes too much time. Processes get extended. And there's a lot of reasons why that's not positive.
I think one of the things that maybe this lends itself to is like, we've gone from like one extreme to the other, where the employees were front and center in the driver's seat, controlling all the action, if you will. And now some of that control or power has gone back to the companies, where the like you just mentioned, they're trying to get a more, you know, the perfect candidate, if you will, someone really that checks every box that they're looking for, as opposed to like, okay, well, we need bodies now, we're going to take whoever we can get.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. So I think that kind of the balance of power, so to speak, is at more of an equilibrium than it's been at in a while. But I also think that one of the challenges we've noticed is there's still a misalignment in some cases on the expectations from the employer side and expectations on the candidate side, particularly on compensation. So I think that the salary inflation and what's happened with salary inflation has been much higher than in some cases than reported in the news. And so then companies want to get like a long list of things, you know, in their job description or requirements. And when the talent actually is seeking higher than what they're willing to pay. And so that can stall out the process is something that I think could be happening as well. Does that resonate with you, Paul, at all?
I think it does. And I think the other thing that you had mentioned just prior is when you see these media headlines of mass layoffs, they get a lot of attention, like, oh, Snap's going to cut 10% of their workforce. Well, 10% of their workforce is like 500 people or 600 people. It doesn't really move the needle a lot. But those like layoff headlines, those get people's attention more so than the actual numbers if you actually dig into them. So I think maybe what you just said there with those fear headlines are maybe what's causing people to really seem like it's slower going than it was a few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think that, I think there's maybe a misconception that it should be easier to fill, you know, that the companies are thinking they maybe, you know, it should be easier. There's more available talent. But I also think that we have not seen a big shift in expectations on the candidate side. So some of those things that coming out of COVID, where, you know, we're finding the candidates are still being very selective, as they should be. You know, I mean, they want to make sure they're going to end up in a position that's a good fit. But things like flexibility, work from home versus working in office.
Yeah, that's one of the topics I want to get into next.
Yeah, but like those things, I think, are slowing down processes because I think there's a mismatch there too. You know, companies want to be totally back in office in some cases. And the talent is saying, well, no, I don't want to be fully in office. I'd like to have some flexibility, or I want to have a hybrid schedule. And so I think there's mismatches occurring possibly there as well.
So is that what you're seeing from, and the great thing about the conversations I have with you is like you work across broad industries, different sectors, different companies, big, medium, small. I mean, you cover it all, which is great because I think that gives you this edge where you have a really fine pulse on things. And that's what I hear from families that I work with is getting, I'll use the term forced back into the office, even if it's 3 days. I think that's been the traditional, like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you're back in the office, Monday, Friday, you're working from home. But now I've even heard from even more clients that no, now it's 5 days. There are no more work from home days. And then even within companies, I think there's this internal struggle where at like the manager level, like people, that manager knows that, hey, this person needs the flexibility. They need to be able to be at home. And then you have some, you know, higher level director, senior director, VP over them saying, no, we got to be steadfast and we can't have exceptions because then there's no consistency.
Right. Yeah, I think it's tough. I mean, so I think what we've noticed is there's trends functionally. So certain functions, it's more common to have hybrid or remote. I think it can be there can be regional differences from what we've observed. And then, you know, there's some companies that are very like manufacturing or, and you know, more industrial. They're like, well, a huge percentage of our workforce can't work from home. This is an on-site job for the majority of our workforce. So what message are we sending when our corporate employees aren't coming into the office, when there's no choice that these, you know, people that are, you know, building a product or they can't. And so I think it's in some cases culture driven where leadership is saying like, you know, how is this perceived by this group of employees that can't work from home because their job doesn't allow for it. And so there's that. And then, you know, I think there is a broad variance even between employees. You know, some employees do really, really well working from home and, you know, some people don't, you know, so it's hard because there's not a one size fits all. And so I think that's what a lot of managers are grappling with is like, how can we meet the needs of our employees, but also meet the needs of our you know, have our corporate goals be met. And, you know, there is just a broad variance in terms of productivity and preference, I think, in these different scenarios. So
I know like with most families that I work with, they're like us, busy parents, yeah, and having that flexibility really worked out. And then going back was like, you know, another like shock to the system. But on the flip side, I work with enough of my families that have kids that have gone through college that are starting their careers. And for them, it's just the opposite. They want to be in the office. They want that interaction. They've told me like, Paul, like I can't even imagine like working from my apartment or my parents' home if they're still living with their parents like all day, every day. I'm like, I want to be in the office. I want to make those relationships and get that experience. And I think it's probably, I've even read your work on this where you wrote about how, you know, being in the office and having that FaceTime, you know, those people can get a leg up when it comes to advancement and opportunities and being seen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's a lot of benefits to in-person. I mean, my team, we kind of have a flexible hybrid situation. So everybody's working from home today. You know, we were looking at the weather forecast and, you know, I've got employees that are coming from, in some cases, a little bit of a distance. And it's just like, hey, let's not deal with the roads today and the and potential traffic and longer commutes due to the snow. You know, if somebody has a doctor's appointment or a contractor coming, hey, yeah, work from home. But the team really likes being in person. We kind of have rituals around lunch and we really enjoy like, you know, sitting down and having lunch together. And so it's a real social kind of aspect of working at Purple Squirrel. And I've heard that with a lot of other teams as well, is they like having that in-person collaboration with their colleagues. I think that questions that you're not going to pick up the phone to call somebody to ask the question, but if your colleague's sitting right next to you, you might ask the question. So I think there's more opportunities to learn from each other in an in-person environment. And then certainly with the younger employees or the earlier career employees, they're going to have mentorship opportunities and learning opportunities that they may not have in a totally virtual environment. And then there's also, you know, people reporting that they're lonely. There's more substance abuse issues that I've heard about with people working from home and who have substance abuse challenges. And so I think there's just, again, I don't think it's a one size fits all. I think that it can really vary according to the person, the team, the function. And so that's what's hard, though, because how do you manage that as a leader?
Yeah, I know that was, I think I mentioned this on the show probably years ago, but that was one of the hardest things that I had to deal with from a transition standpoint when I left my last full-time corporate role and came into TAM on a full-time basis, is that I was always surrounded by people, or I was traveling a lot, still surrounded by people. And then to go to, you know, I'm working in an office in my home and it's just me and the four walls. And I can look to my left, I look to my right, behind me, and you've known me long enough, Carrie, like I'm a very social person.
Yeah.
And that was really hard. And I got to the point where like I'd structure my day where I would do some of my work in the morning in my office, and then I'd go to a Panera, I'd go to a Starbucks, I'd go to the library, just so I could be around other people and feel normal. And there's this balancing act, I think, that parents have, especially like when there's a situation where, like in our situation with Teresa and I, Teresa, you know, corporate job, you know, doing hybrid, and then I'm completely remote at home. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of that, the kid stuff falls on me, right or wrong. It's just, this is how it is. And I think that can cause some strife with relationships with parents and trying to manage, you know, all, you know, kids' activities, homework, dinner, all of that.
Yeah, no, it's a big challenge. In fact, I had a call this morning right before we started here. My daughter was calling from school and she's saying that she doesn't feel good. She's in the office and, you know, so one of us are like, and I think she's actually fine. I think she's just tired and doesn't want to be at school. But one of us have to go pick her up, right? And so then it's calling my husband and we're navigating who has what, whose schedule's more busy, who can go get her, who can stay home. You know, it's just, it is a really, really tough thing, I think, as working parents. What we have found, like when we're recruiting, I think it does, again, depend geographically. Also, I think in major cities, if there's a company that's in office 5 days a week with minimal flexibility, honestly, like I can have a lot of hesitation about taking on that search. I mean, again, with lots of other factors, including function and whatnot. But like generally speaking, like if a company does require, you know, in office, it will satisfy most people's needs if there's at least some flexibility, you know. And so that's when we're kicking off a search. We're like, okay, we understand that the desire is for your teams to be on site, but on an as needed basis. So not on a schedule, but on an as needed basis. You know, is there an ability to work from home? And if the answer is no, that can be so limiting in terms of the talent, you know, I think, and by as needed, I'm meaning like situation like today, snowstorm, kids sick, contractor, but those are more, you know, they're not scheduled. And so versus having, okay, yeah, you're going to be working from home Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or you're working from home every Friday. I think a lot of companies are more hesitant to have that. Versus having the flexibility on an as needed basis.
One of the things I actually want to pick up on that is when we had talked a couple of years ago, what was interesting. So again, most people know we live in Michigan, Metro Detroit, fairly low cost part of the country compared to others, where bigger companies, mainly from like out west, Silicon Valley, were coming in and plucking people out because, you know, with working remote, you know, they weren't just looking in the Valley anymore. They could look nationwide for candidates. And do you still see that where like some higher cost areas of the country, employers are still looking in the Midwest where it's lower cost living and pulling people out?
I don't think it's happening as much. I don't know for sure, because like we were doing a little bit of recruiting in public accounting at the time. And so it was happening quite a lot in public accounting and with IT. And honestly, I don't have a pulse on that at the moment. I think it's easing up a little bit. But I will say that, you know, for example, we've got a couple searches that we're just kicking off, and the position is going to be supervising talent across the U.S. And so so they can live in various markets. And our clients specifically said, probably makes more sense to recruit in lower cost of living markets versus higher cost of living markets. So I definitely think it's on the radar of like, hey, if we have our choice, like let's target candidates in these areas that we know are lower cost versus higher cost. But I don't know if some of those West Coast firms are still kind of coming in and recruiting at volume here in like our lower cost of living market. I just don't have a great pulse on that, unfortunately.
Okay. So I'd like to shift to maybe a tactical question that I know that a lot of people are asking or trying to explore, which is AI and how AI can help from a resume standpoint, from a cover letter standpoint, from an interview standpoint. What has been your take on how to either utilize AI or potentially how companies are utilizing AI to put together job descriptions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing about it more and more. So in fact, I was just at a meeting yesterday. I presented to a group of entrepreneurs on hiring practices and retention and things. And in that room, more than a handful of people mentioned that they were using AI to help with their job descriptions and things like that. So I definitely think it's happening more and more. I've used AI in a few instances, and what I'm noticing is that I can do like some great like brainstorming or creative work with AI. So even for example, I host a lot of meetings or put together a lot of events, and I might drop in information on kind of who's the speaker, what the event topic is.
Yeah, it seems like every week you're hosting something.
I host a lot of events, and sometimes it's like, okay, so I've got all this information, but like, what should the title of the event be? And so I'll put in all the information into ChatGPT, and like within seconds, it spits out some titles. And then I may not use any of those titles like word for word, but at least it kind of gets my brain flowing. Yeah. I'm like, okay, maybe I'll piece together of a couple of them, or I'll take one and tweak it. And I think it's the same for job descriptions and other things. Like, you know, it's a starting point, but then it oftentimes I found it requires modification. And so I think that the output is only as good as the input and the you know, the amount of information you're providing to the AI tool also. So I think but I do think it's a huge time saver, you know, from my experience, you know, and even like topics to write about or interview questions. Yes, you can absolutely use it for that.
Yeah, I think it takes some of the pressure off of like staring at a blank page. Yeah. And in working with the broad base of companies that you work with, are companies looking for specific AI skills at this point, or is it still like just so early on?
I haven't seen it, but I'll give you another example. Like, so we use LinkedIn Recruiter a lot, and LinkedIn Recruiter is putting in all this AI into their system. And so like, for example, if I'm recruiting for a particular role, there's now an AI assisted in-mail. I have found like that I don't use it actually, because it just doesn't sound like my voice, you know? And I'm like, gosh, I could see how this could work, but it just is weird. You know, like it's not the way I would typically write to a candidate. So like I'd rather spend more time and have the message come across like authentically as me, versus this AI generated message. And so, I feel like I can tell when I receive a message that has been generated by AI. So that's just my caution on it, is that like, there are some things that like it just doesn't seem like, you know, there's just a hint of, you know, this isn't how a person would normally write from Michigan, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or something like that. So but I don't know, employers aren't asking about it yet again, but I think some functions where it could be utilized more, like marketing, and you know, there's an upcoming webinar on AI and accounting and finance. So I'd be really curious to hear kind of how it's being utilized in those areas, you know, for forecasting or other types of activities.
Yeah, I think sometimes like when I'm exploring ChatGPT and the other AI tools that are out there, I try to think back and put on my old corporate, you know, CFO hat, and think, well, I wonder like how this is going to change from a forecasting analysis perspective. And it's, you know, the one thing that's come up is right now we don't know the impact it's going to have on the labor markets, if it's going to take jobs out of the market. But it, from my perspective and what I've read and researched on it, it definitely helps make people's jobs a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. I know, like in my, with my firm Tama, it's definitely made it a little bit easier from the things I do on a marketing standpoint. I haven't really started using it yet with clients, but it's coming. I mean, it will continue to develop, and you know, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think. But back to like how to make it the most useful, I think it's having the right prompts, you know, so
prompt engineering is big. That's, if there's one thing I've learned about, I'm glad you mentioned that. Sorry to interrupt, but is like, I've looked at YouTube videos and even have like classes now, is it's how you write the prompts, called prompt engineering to be specific, is how you get the most bang for your buck out of it.
Right. And then I think, what's even funny too, is I've read that even like complimenting the AI and saying, wow, that's really great. Thank you so much. Like, and it feels weird to be interacting with like a computer that way, but like, I've read that like, it does make a difference in some cases. If you're polite and providing good prompts, like you're going to get a better quality output. Does that seem funny to you though, Paul? I mean, I don't know if you've read the same thing, but.
It does. And I've actually started doing that. Like the name of my chat GPT is Alex. Like, I don't know how it came up with that name, but I'm like, cause I put in like, what should I call you? Like, you can call me Alex. I'm like, okay, great. Hi, Alex. How are you? And it does. It's still weird to do that. But then I think about if I'm just like, if you had a Slack channel open and you're talking to somebody, it's like if you try to take a similar approach where like if you think about not a computer on the other side but a potential human, you know, it again, it may sound funny, but again, what I've read in research too, you know, it makes it, I don't know if it gives you the better information out of it, but it makes the whole experience more human. And the more human that you can make the experience, then the better outputs that you can get. So I think that's maybe where you're going. And I think there is some legitimacy to that and trying to, you know, ask it personal questions.
Yeah. And I'll give you another example of a way I couldn't really envision this using this from like a job seeker standpoint. So let's say, for example, like you could find a job description that really appeals to you as a job seeker. And so then you could drop the job description and your resume into ChatGPT and ask for an analysis of, you know, if you were a hiring manager and you were hiring for this position, how good of a match do I appear to be based on my resume? And then you could ask, well, where do you see the potential gaps in experience or qualifications? And then I think that the AI tool could do an analysis for you like that. And then based on the information, then you can decide, okay, well, if I have, do I really have those gaps, or are those, is that just missing information on my resume? And so then that could give the job seeker a way to potentially add to their resume. If they have, of course, only if they have the experience that is referenced as a gap.
I love that example you just gave, because what you just did at the beginning, that's classic prompt engineering, like asking it those specific questions and giving it. If you're just going to ask it like a one-off question, like you would in a Google search. And I think that's what people need to realize, is that Google search and using ChatGPT are totally different things. So
let's take it a step further too. So like, let's talk about like prompts for like preparing for an interview. So then you could say, here's the job description. Here's my resume. My first interview is with a VP of HR. So if you provide all the information in the context on who the interview is with, then you can say, help me prepare for the interview. Can you provide me with some potential questions that a typical VP of HR would ask when hiring for this position? And then you could say, okay, great. Now I'm going to be going into a technical interview. I'm going to be interviewing with a VP of engineering or whatever the title is. And ChatGPT could give some potential, or, you know, one of these AI tools could give some potential questions from the lens of that person. So I think it's really important to say, like, the end user is, or
yes,
the person that, you know, please provide suggestions from the perspective of a VP of HR or a VP of engineering or of an entrepreneur. And so, again, it's not going to be perfect, but it'll just give some ideas on, you know, what you could do to prepare. So those are just some things that I've noticed.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. The more detailed and specific that you can give it, the better your outcomes are going to be. So are you having conversations with candidates about this? Are they using it? What feedback are they giving to you?
So, you know, it's funny. They may be using it and we just don't know.
You just don't know.
I mean, like, so it's very possible, but yeah, we haven't asked our candidates about it. And in fact, I don't even think I've talked to candidates about these options. So, like, if somebody calls me though for career advice, or I'm trying to make a job transition, or I'm searching for a new job, and if they're struggling, some of the suggestions I would probably give in those instances would be to use some of these tools, or, like, I've often suggested a word cloud, saying, like, we'll find some job descriptions that really appeal to you, and put those in a word cloud.
What's a word cloud?
There's something called, like, Wordle, but you could probably even use, again, a ChatGPT or something else now to analyze the job description and identify the themes, or what are the three areas that are the most prominent in this job description. And so, like, it'll grab, like, repeating words or things like that. And so, like, that's just a tip that I've given historically. But again, I think that it could be replaced by an AI. And then saying, okay, well, so now you've got the themes, and then making sure that if you have the experience represented in those themes, that it's highlighted in your resume. So making the resume a better match to the job description, to the jobs that you're seeking. That's one way to do that.
So do you think you'll start asking candidates, like, are you using these tools at all, or ChatGPT?
I guess we could. Yeah. I mean, but we're also digging in, like, in a lot of, like, I mean, I guess my concern with it would be if they're using it and they've somehow generated information on their resume that they don't actually have.
Yeah,
that would be a concern with it. But generally, we're doing a pretty deep dive when we're interviewing on behalf of a client. We're discussing the experience and, you know, what's highlighted on the resume at a level that, like, I think we'd flush out if they didn't actually have the experience and they had used AI to include those types of things as well. I don't know if that's exactly what you were asking, but I'm just trying to.
No, I think, yeah, I think it is. Cause I wonder how many people are actually taking advantage of using ChatGPT or any AI tool to, you know, either help them in their search or help them build a resume. And it kind of leads into, like, one of my bigger topics or closing questions I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, I deal with busy parents, just like you and your husband. We have kids. We're, you know, at the stage of our careers where they're going full go and everybody's busy. Like, I haven't met a parent yet that isn't busy. But one of the things that I've noticed over the last year is this theme of a person being very unhappy either within their career or in their job. And I think there's a difference between that. Like, you could work for, I'm trying to think of a company like none of my clients work for. You could work for Acme Manufacturing, and it's in the engineering space, if you will. So you could not like working at Acme, but you could love being an engineer. But you could also not like being an engineer. So that engineer is your career, Acme is your job. And so I have people that are, most people are unhappy in their job. They don't like their company they work for. But then there's other people I've spoken to that are unhappy in their career. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges that they have is that, you know, I was, you know, in the meeting I was just having before with somebody, I drew this circle and I had this, you know, career, parenting, relationship, and self, this diagram, if you will. And you're right in the middle of it. And so there's times where parenting, like in the example you gave, like somebody's got to go pick up my daughter from school because she's sick. So there's times when parenting is taking up more time. There's other areas where career is taking more time. And then God help us if we can have a conversation with our spouse or partners about what's going on in our lives. And then there's ourselves, you know, how do we take care of ourselves? So there's no shortage of things going on. And where I'm going with this rant, if you will, this long-winded answer or question is, I can see people really struggling to figure out, how do I take the first step to just do something about my career or my job? And I liken it to when somebody first shows up at my doorstep as far as looking for a financial advisor, they're usually scared out of their mind because they've never worked with anybody before, or they're afraid of what they're going to be told. And it's not lost on me that it took a lot of effort to get to that point where they finally picked up the phone or scheduled a meeting. And I see that same scenario with people that are trying to figure out what they want to do within their career. And so I wanted to, with all that being said, find out from your perspective, Carrie, like, what guidance would you give to somebody that's really struggling on either trying to figure out what career they want to be in or what job change they would like to see happen? Because they're so overwhelmed with all the other aspects of their life that they don't move at all. They don't move at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's that saying, the devil you know versus the devil you don't. Yeah. And I think so job changes can be really scary. And I think a lot of people stay in jobs that they're not necessarily fulfilled in or happy with because it's the known versus the unknown, you know? And so I think that's one of the biggest challenges in generally with job change. And even depending on how long somebody has been in their current company, you know, there's kind of that safety factor. But I think that, you know, in terms of changing jobs or changing careers, you know, kind of analyzing like what your skills are, and then, okay, so if I'm unhappy in my job, that's different than being unhappy in my career. So if you want to change into a new type of role, trying to figure out like what's reasonable, what are my skills, and how might I pivot those skills into a different type of job, or, you know, different type of career. But I mean, in terms of changing companies, I would say that, just raising your hand and kind of starting to kind of dip your toe in the water of making a job change doesn't mean you're going to make a job change, right? Like, it just means you're going to explore a job change. And so having conversations, being open to doing some interviews, that doesn't mean you're going to take the job if you get it, right? And so I think having some conversations and seeing what else is out there is a positive step. I'm always shocked when somebody has their LinkedIn page marked as open to work or open to new opportunities, and we send them a message about an opportunity that seems to align, and they don't even want to have an initial phone call. Like, it can't hurt to have those initial phone calls and start exploring and seeing what's out there. So that would be just one easy suggestion, is have some dialogue. And it doesn't mean you're making a change just if you have a conversation. And then that can kind of direct, you know, like it can actually help to inform, like, okay, so is the grass greener or not? Like, based on what I'm learning about these other opportunities that are out there. So I think having those conversations, talking to friends and colleagues, and, you know, finding out what their experiences are can be very beneficial. You know, I can tell you, I was that person 10 years ago that felt like I wanted to make a change, but I was scared to make a change. You know, at the time, my husband was a stay-at-home dad. I had two little babies at home, and I'd been with my company for 10 years. And I'd looked and I tried to leave at different points. And I definitely was in a situation where I wasn't sure I liked my career. I definitely didn't like where I was in the company, you know, the company itself, but I was also terrified of like, what's on the other side of this? What is, you know, what's out there? And, you know, it's obviously my situation changed and I ended up becoming an entrepreneur. And I can look back on moments where I'm like, gosh, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, that I actually kind of got, I kind of got forced into a change, and it was for the best, but it was hard at the time.
You work with a lot of people in job transitions. I work with a lot of people that have gone through or are in job transitions even right now. I've been through job transitions before. And it's the worst feeling in the world, because at the moment when you're in the thick of it. Like mm-hmm. once, like when it, you know, happened to you and it happened, like just happened, like there's this thought, it's like, how am I ever going to recover from this? Versus looking at it from, oh my gosh, this could be the best thing ever. But right. when you're in the throes of, when you just got handed a letter and say, okay, you're no longer, you know, wanted or welcomed here, you know, thinking that that's the best thing that happened to you is the furthest thing from your mind.
Right.
But I don't know about you, but I've been in this for almost 15 years now or longer than that. And everybody I've met that have gone through that, including myself, I have not met one person that hasn't come out better mm-hmm. now than they were before. And yeah. I think it kind of gets back to your point. It's like, you know, there's that comfort level that you get in staying with some place, even though you don't like it. And I think that's a frustration maybe that I have, is I want to be an empathetic listener and ear to people, whether they work with me or not, about their career and potential making change, but then not to make that change or not to take that first step. That's what I've often struggled with. They're like, how can I really help people take that first emotional and scary first step?
Yeah. And I just think having those, I mean, again, I think it's just getting into that mindset of, just because I'm having an interview or a conversation doesn't mean I'm leaving my job. It just means I'm having some conversations, having some interviews and exploring opportunities. So I think that's just a subtle shift, because nobody's expecting somebody to take a job just because they've gone on an interview. But I think sometimes people they go to that point and it prevents them from even going, or they're scared that their employer's going to find out, which is reasonable. But I think there's ways to protect the confidentiality of a search as well. Absolutely.
I love our conversations. I know we probably talk more on email than we do in person anymore, but you know, I always love our conversations, and I know I get a lot out of it, and I think our audience will as well. Typically my closing question I ask all my guests is, what's the best thing about being a parent? But since you're a former a guest, let me kind of twist the question a little bit and ask, what is the best thing about being an entrepreneur?
Oh my gosh. I love the flexibility to be creative in my role. So I think that's, you know, as an entrepreneur, there's an opportunity to be very creative. I'm a creative person. And so it's that creativity that I can bring to my job, to working with my colleagues, and also to working with clients. And so I'm not restricted by a corporate policy. We can be flexible on contract terms or different things to kind of meet the needs of our customers. And so I love that freedom and flexibility that I have as an entrepreneur.
Well, Carrie, I can't thank you enough for being on the show again. And we'll make sure that we put a link to Purple Square in the show notes, our previous conversation that we had, and then our newsletter as well, that you can find the jobs that Carrie is currently working on with Purple Square.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's great to see you. Thanks for having me on.
So what were my big takeaways from our conversation with Carrie? I think for me, because this is so personal and working with the way that I do with my families at Tama, is there's a difference between not liking your job and not liking your career. Not liking your job, as we talked about, there are actionable steps that you can take today. But I think for most people, the fear of making a change is probably the biggest deterrent of people taking that next step to make a change. And like Carrie mentioned, dip your toe in the water, put feelers out, maybe go on some interviews. That doesn't mean you have to take the job. But we also talked about not liking your career. And from that vantage point, then there's some real soul searching that needs to happen to figure out, okay, what is it that I really want to do? And I don't think it matters your age or your industry, whether you're 30, 40, 50, you have to remember, most people are living a lot longer. And so it does not benefit yourself or your family to go through a miserable career or a miserable job. So keep that in mind. You may not be doing it just for yourself. You may be doing it for your family as well. The other thing that we touched on quite a bit was the impact that AI can have on building a resume, creating mock interview questions, taking a job description, putting into something like a ChatGPT, and seeing how closely your resume aligns to that job description, and to see if there's any gaps, and then to identify, are those gaps legitimate? And that can help go a long way in seeing if it's a good fit. And then I would also mention that we talked a lot about the flexibility of working at home and the changes that's taken place with most employers wanting people back into the office on a hybrid and even sometimes full-time basis, and how that can really skew people's perception of what they want in a job, what they want in a career. So there you have it. Thanks for tuning in this week, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Emotional Balance Sheet Podcast. Please visit tamacapital.com to follow the podcast and connect with certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, Paul Fenner of tamacapital.com. And please join us again next time on the Emotional Balance Sheet Podcast.